And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on a Wednesday afternoon as we help you get towards the weekend and the holidays. With plenty to do over the next few hours. Coming up, why the NFL games are different this time of year. Plus, more bad news for Clemson. Now that we can finally put the finishing touches on week 15 in the NFL season, we'll start to look ahead to week 16. It's also the final show of the week for us, so I'll give you my picks later on. We'll talk some golf with Jeremy Schilling, why golf has a problem with its biggest stars, which teams are currently in their Super Bowl window. Every time this time of year, we see which NFL teams are being visited by the ghost of Christmas past, present, or future when it comes to their Super Bowl opportunities. We'll do that later on. Continue to get ready for the holidays and whatever else comes up. You can always join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Wednesday afternoon. Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, what's going on? Just our last show before the Christmas holiday. Yeah. And you see what's in my hand.
Yeah, what's that? What do you got there?
I have a wrestling report.
Oh, boy. Yes. Oh.
I know Bobby's
so
excited.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
He thought this Christmas season couldn't get any better. What a gift. By the way, not only the last show before Christmas. You know, I was saying yesterday we were going to be back next week. Well, actually, behind the scenes, the way things have worked out, this is actually going to be the last Morrow Midday Show of 2021 as it works out. So I know you're going to miss me. We'll be back after the new year, whatever that Monday is. What is that, January 3rd? So after today, we're actually going to be off for about a week and a half. And next week, I know, or even moving forward. Right, no fan talk today because of South Carolina basketball. Once you get to the holiday season, things are a little sporadic. So you'll have fan talk early next week. The Scott Hamilton show a few times next week, but with the holidays, be shut down for a few days here or there. I'll be traveling as well. So originally we were going to do our shows all of next week, but some things have changed. And so this is the final Morrow Midday Show of 2021. And then we'll regroup in the new year in 2022. Speaking of which, hopefully when we come back for 2022, some of these things can be corrected. We've been talking, if you've been listening to the shows over the last couple of weeks, you've heard some complaining on our end about the headphone setup in here. It has been good lately, but for some reason, I have no slack today. I feel like I'm droopy dog. The headphones are extended as long as they can, and it's yanking me across the room. So a bit of an awkward position here, but we're going to make it work. And hopefully in 2022, New Year's resolution or put it on my Christmas list, we will get this headphone situation figured out by then. But the wire right now is very tight against the table. It's probably going to snap at some point, and then the headphones aren't going to work at all, and we'll get through it.
So you feel like droopy?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Then say this for me.
I'm not doing the voice.
You know what? I'm happy.
Yeah, exactly. It's like yanking me. It's like grabbing me from his cheeks or his ears, pulling me across the room here. So I don't know what has happened in the last 24 hours, but do I ever. Let me start with this. We finally made it through week 15 of the NFL season. Took a few extra days. A lot of people I've seen online, I've seen in this industry, complaining about some of the ugly games the last couple of days. Now, as I said on the show yesterday, look, I'd rather watch bad football than no football. What difference does it make? The alternative is not having any football. Beggars can't be choosers. If you're starving, you can't really complain about the quality of food you're getting. You'd rather have something than not eat at all. I'd rather watch some sort of football than no football at all. But the games at least have been close, competitive. They've just been low scoring. And when games are low scoring, a lot of times people think that that equates to boring football. There are a couple of reasons why this time of year, this is what happens. This is December football. It's not pretty, and it's just about winning. Number one, for this year in particular, obviously because of COVID and players being out. Right? When you're missing a bunch of players, of course that's going to hurt. When you have to use second-string guys instead of your starters, there's going to be a drop-off in quality, especially when it happens at the quarterback position. So when you look at the last 2 days alone, you had to see Garrett Gilbert and Nick Mullins and even Justin Fields. Andy Dalton unavailable because of COVID. You get a rookie, Justin Fields, who was overmatched on Monday night. It's why the AAF and the XFL and all these other leagues have struggled, because the quarterback play hasn't been good enough. Last couple of days in the NFL, quarterback play hasn't been good enough. That could lead you to tuning out. Number two reason, well, the games have been moved. Right? And so when you throw guys out of their routine and when you're playing on a Tuesday night, it can be a little odd. As a Vikings fan, one of my fondest memories of the past decade was when the Vikings went to Philadelphia on a Tuesday night. It was supposed to be a Sunday night game. Snowstorm came along. It was 2010. They moved it to Tuesday. It was actually this time of year. It was right around the, it was Christmas week. They moved it to Tuesday. And the Eagles were maybe the number one seed that year with Michael Vick. They were one of the best teams in the NFC. And the Vikings had a losing season. They fired their coach, and they were playing with an interim coach, and they went to Philadelphia, and they beat the Eagles. And they're a big underdog, and they won the game outright. It was supposed to be a Sunday night game. Then a snowstorm came. They pushed it back to Tuesday. The Eagles lost. Big loss for them at the time. Now, when you throw guys out of the routine and you move games around, it sounds so minor. What's the difference? They're playing a football game. Who cares if it's on this day or that day? But when you throw things out of whack, it changes things. It could lead to lesser performances. Not only that, but in this case, right, you move the games and then you even lose more players because of COVID. I don't know how much better these games would have been if they were actually played as scheduled, but I don't think it helps when you're moving them around. Number three, players are worn down this time of year. I remember having this conversation with somebody in September when they were talking about Kyler Murray. And they said, Kyler Murray, right, enjoy it now. The reason why he looks so good is because he's so much fresher than everybody. That when you're at your when you're all at 100%, he's quicker and he's faster. And then as the season wears down and Kyler starts taking some beatings, things even out a little bit. And by December, certain players are worn down and you're a step slower and you're banged up and you're not 100%. No one's 100% this time of year. And when you look at the Cardinals in particular, maybe that's been the case. Kyler Murray got injured. They haven't been the same team since his return here in December. The Cowboys haven't been the same since Dak Prescott's injury and his return. As the season goes along, you chip away a little bit at all these guys. September football is the highest scoring month in the NFL because everyone's good to go. They're fresh. And then by the end of the season, right, they're a little beat down, a little worn out. They could use a few days off. They could use a second bye week. Number four, of course, the weather. When you look at these last 2 days alone, three of the four games were played outdoors in cold cities. Now, I went to look this up to confirm my suspicion. And the numbers back up my thought that not only is December the lowest scoring month, but also December in cold cities is the lowest scoring type of game. December in warm cities or domes, they score as many points as a normal NFL game. So it's not just this month, but it is directly tied to weather. When you go outdoors to Cleveland or Chicago or Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, any of these cold cities, and you're playing outdoors and the field's all beat up by this time of year and it's cold and you can't throw the football as well and it's more about running the football and shortening the game, you'll have fewer points. And then lastly, the fifth reason why football this time of year turns a little ugly in the NFL is because they're mostly divisional games. Five of the six primetime games this past weekend, yes, we ended up with six primetime games, five of the six were divisional games. And if you go back and you look at the numbers, historically, since the merger, divisional games are closer than a non-divisional game in the NFL. Why? Because you know one another so well. You play that team twice. A lot of times this time of year, it's a rematch. So you face them earlier. You make some adjustments. The defense can catch up to the offense. And these games become more defensive. They become more important. Players are locked in. They're tighter. They're lower scoring. They're more of a battle. A lot of divisional games this time of year. That usually leads to close games, sometimes ugly games, and a lot of times lower scoring games. The offense always has the edge on the defense because the defense, you're just reacting to what the offense is going to do. So when you face a team for the second time, or you face a team in week 15 when you have 13 games of film on them, you have a little bit of a better idea of what they're going to do, making it a little bit easier to react. Right, think about yourself in your life. You have a buddy, maybe a brother of yours. You guys wrestle all the time, and he gets you with a move early on. The first couple of times, you link up. You start fighting in the living room over the TV remote. After a couple of times, you know his move. You know how to react to it. And when he goes to try to body slam you or whatever it is, you have the reversal for it. Just like with football teams. You play a team in September, you don't really know what you're going to get. By the time you play them in December, you say, oh, yeah, that's what they like to do. This is how we're going to counteract it. Games this time every year. We have the same conversation every year. People complain. Oh, these games are boring. Oh, they're ugly. They're tough to watch. It's December football. It's outdoors. It's cold. It's against divisional teams with a lot on the line. Quarterbacks are beat up this time of year. This is what happens. And I'll take it over no football. I'll watch those games. I watched, even with the Citadel basketball game last night, I was watching both games. I had multiple screens going. It was great. I'll watch every minute of these games. Doesn't matter. It's better than not having any NFL football. But this is kind of the norm. This time of year, this is what should be expected. Let me shift to this. More bad news for Clemson. We get the news this morning. I don't know if it's technically official yet, but Jaron Koenig, four-star recruit, has enrolled at Oklahoma. Now, he had committed to Clemson in July, and they were waiting, so too were Clemson fans, on his confirmation over the past week. He was the lone Clemson commit to not sign last week for early signing day. We had Joseph Hastings on the show last week after early signing day to put a bow on the job that Clemson did, and that was the name that he signaled out, that he mentioned, saying, you know, we're still waiting on this kid. That'll be the 13th player. Talking about, a little bit of a surprise, he didn't sign yet. Well, as it turns out, he's on his way to Oklahoma. Decommitted from Clemson, and he's going to Oklahoma. He was the number 10 athlete in the rankings according to 24/7 Sports. He's technically an athlete, right? Doesn't have a position because he was a two-way player in high school. He played quarterback. He played safety. He's projected as a linebacker or safety at the college level and, of course, has been compared to Isaiah Simmons from Clemson, who's now in the NFL, who is one of those hybrid type of players on defense. That's what Koenig projects to be. But he's off to Oklahoma. So now you have four decommits from Clemson, all on the defensive side of football. And when you look at the four of them, three are four-star recruits, and another one is a five-star recruit. So a lot of talent going elsewhere. And we know for Clemson, their strength has been their defense. And now you're losing your great defensive coordinator, Brent Venables, and you're losing some potential new talent on that side of the football. The offense has already been lagging behind. Maybe you can't afford many more losses. Maybe you look at it as you can afford more losses on the defensive side of the football than the offensive side. But as you try to keep those two sides of the football at the same level, the defensive side of the football right now is taking on water a little bit. Losing Venables, having a defensive coordinator who has never done it before now, replacing him, losing four commitments, and I don't know how big of a role they would play this upcoming season as freshmen, but just down the road, you're missing some talent now from that roster that you were expecting to have while trying to keep that defense as potent as it has been. And for Clemson, I went back and looked this up. That's four decommits this year for Clemson. They have had four total in the last 7 years, which dates back to when they started making the college football playoff. Since their run of playoffs, the 7 years in which they kept making the college football playoff, they had four decommits overall. They have four this year. At one point during that stretch, they went 4 years without a single player decommitting from Clemson because everybody wanted to be there. They've now had six decommits in the last 2 years. And a lot goes into this, right? Same with the transfer portal. Clemson right now, they've had nine players in the transfer portal enter said portal in the last 3 months. I remember after the 2018 season when transferring was starting to pick up, Clemson was the only top 15 team that year to not have a single player transfer between the end of the season and then the summer heading into 2019. From the end of the 2018 season into summer camp in 2019, they had nobody enter the transfer portal after that year. They were the only of the top 15 teams in college football. That's when transferring really started to ramp up and now has only continued to increase to the point where we are today. But at that time, I remember talking about it on the show. and saying that that's a real credit to Clemson and the family community that they've built there that players don't seem to want to leave. They're leaving all the other top programs, but they didn't want to leave Clemson, even if they weren't starters. They wanted to stay. And now, over the past 3 months, you've had 9 Clemson players enter the portal, more than they've had in the past. You've had 4 decommits. You've had the coaches, the coordinators, right, finally leave as well. And a couple of things turn into this, you know, right, or go into this. Number one, it's kind of the way of college football these days. A lot more decommits nowadays than ever before. Obviously, a lot more transfers. Of course, when the coordinators leave, Brent Venables was recruiting these guys. In fact, Koenig, the kid today, going to Oklahoma, where Venables is. So that plays a large role, too, where the coordinators leave, and so you no longer are interested in that school. But we also know kids can be fickle today. In fact, we as sports fans or even analysts can be fickle. Florida had a terrible season. They lose their coach. They had their worst recruiting maybe of all time. They finished last in the SEC, even behind Vanderbilt. When Notre Dame had a 4-8 season about 5 years ago under Brian Kelly, the worst season under Brian Kelly, they also had their worst recruiting that offseason. And players kind of they changed their mind, thinking, oh, you know what, I don't care to go to Notre Dame anymore. All it took was one down year. Clemson coming off a down year, they lose their coordinators. They get 4 decommits on the football, on the defensive side of the football. And it may not seem like much, but it's all happening for the first time. And think back to maybe the first time you were ever turned down for something or rejected or maybe even dumped, or you had a buddy or you knew somebody that you grew up with and they were, you know, the big man on campus and they were used to getting every opportunity they ever wanted or any girl that was always interested in them or whatever the situation may have been. And the first time that they heard no, or the first time that somebody actually turned them down or they got dumped, and the reaction I'm sure that they had, we've seen it play out in movies before. I think of Dennis in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, right, when they're so shocked, but you're turning me down? And people don't react well to that. That's kind of become Clemson, where for years, players didn't want to leave the program. They would come back for an extra year. Coordinators never left. Players wouldn't enter the transfer portal. Guys wouldn't decommit. They would commit to Clemson and never have to change their mind, saying, yeah, well, that's where I want to be. And now, in the last couple of months, a large part of this is the way college football has gone. Obviously, a large portion is also the fact that the coordinators have finally left, although that's also part of this whole thing. But as you look at Clemson in the last 3 months, more players in the portal than they've had, more decommits this year than the last 7 combined. The coordinators do finally leave for other opportunities. A lot of change for Clemson, coming off their worst season in a couple of years, followed by their worst recruiting ranking in quite a few years, and a lot of change for the Tigers. Sometimes it takes one down year that leads to maybe a second season of similar results, and things can change moving forward. And by the way, you look across the aisle in that conference, Pittsburgh just added Keaton Slovis in the transfer portal, the quarterback from USC, to replace Kenny Pickett, and that's a big get. So as I've been saying over the past week or two, that gap closing a little bit, where Florida State and UNC put together better recruiting classes. Miami adds Mario Cristobal. Pittsburgh just won the ACC and now replacing one NFL quarterback with what some believe will be another in Keaton Slovis. And it also relates to what I've been saying about the Gamecocks, that once you get that one quarterback, that can start the snowball rolling down the hill. You bring in a Spencer Rattler, you put him in the NFL, he has a good season. Suddenly, it's another option for you as a high school quarterback thinking, hey, I can go there and eventually get to the NFL. Pittsburgh had a great season from Kenny Pickett, and now Keaton Slovis entering the transfer portal saying, hey, that's an option for me. I can go to Pitt, have a good year, become an NFL quarterback, try to win the ACC. Maybe this starts a trend for Pittsburgh bringing in good quarterbacks, which only makes them tougher and therefore the ACC more difficult. And also, by the way, Alabama, speaking of that transfer portal, added a running back from Georgia Tech. So now Alabama has the number 2 recruiting class and the number 3 transfer class, the rich getting richer, which also relates to what I have said for really months now about Clemson not using the transfer portal. That's all good and well if you don't want to, but your competitors will take advantage of it instead. So not only is Alabama, have they put together a number 2 recruiting class, they're also adding experience through the portal. They have the number 3 transfer class. So if you don't want to use the portal, that's fine, but your competitors are going to get better through it, therefore widening their gap with you and everybody else. For Clemson, more bad news in the last 24 hours. They lose another decommit, and maybe it's just a little, it's just a little mark on the resume maybe you won't even notice over the next couple of years. Won't make a difference to the Tigers. But it's just the signs of all the changes and the no's being thrown Clemson's way for the first time ever. Coordinators finally leaving, players decommitting, guys entering the transfer portal at a higher rate. Not used to seeing this with Clemson. And meanwhile, Cristobal's now in Miami. Pittsburgh's bringing in another good quarterback. They just won the ACC. Mack Brown and Mike Norvell put together better recruiting classes. That gap shrinking a little bit in the ACC.
There is someone bucking the trend, though. Coastal Carolina of quarterback Grayson McCall has decided to stay with the Chanticleers. So in order to get somewhere, he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, and I think it's the right move. I'm sure he has opportunities to go play elsewhere. But, you know, with the familiarity you have with that offense and that system and that coaching staff, why not? And the success that they have, if he continues to develop, he'll be an NFL quarterback. Somebody asked on the text line about McCall earlier this week, I think that was. And for McCall, as I said, I think he's the type of guy, because of the offense he plays in at Coastal, that he would need to be the right fit in the NFL, somebody like a Shanahan that's going to really help him out instead of just like a kind of like an Andy Reid offense or something where you're just dropping back and throwing. He needs a little more assistance. He's played really well at Coastal Carolina. I don't think he's ready for the NFL yet. I'm sure he's had opportunities to transfer to bigger schools. But why not stay where you already are? Because you've had success. The team's good. You know the system. You're playing well. You could get to the NFL from there. I think McCall, I understand, is certainly a decision. Sometimes you can't get happier than happy. Sometimes you can't get better than good. You don't need to go chase waterfalls, to use another cliche, by going to like the SEC. Just stay where you are. You're playing well. The team's having success. You're discussed as an NFL player. McCall coming back for 2022 at Coastal Carolina. Coming up, we'll start to look ahead. Even though we just wrapped up week 15 of the NFL season, took a little bit longer, we'll start to look ahead to this weekend in the NFL. Just 3 weeks to go. Plus, this is our final show, actually, of 2021. We'll also look ahead to Christmas Day. It's usually a big day for the NBA, and it could be a little bit different this year because of the pandemic. We'll get to some thoughts on that coming up as well. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. A programming note, we'll be with you till 2:30 today, leading into pregame coverage of South Carolina's game with Army, assuming that they actually tip it off. We'll get into that in just a moment. Well, that game's scheduled for 3 o'clock today. You can never assume that any basketball game is going to get underway until I actually begin it because of the COVID protocol, especially in college basketball, where things are a little more tighter. But we'll be with you right up until the coverage begins at 2:30 today. And then the Morrow Midday Show is off until 2022, which is hard to say. You got to get used to saying that. Right? It always takes me about a month when it comes to dating things. Now, fortunately, once you become an adult, you know, like I don't write many checks anymore. You don't have to date things very often. How much paperwork are you signing? Maybe depending on your job. But when you work in sports talk radio, you don't have to sign a whole lot of documents. But in school, that was always the worst, because you would always have to date everything in school, and it would take me a whole month to remember the new year. So I'm going to have to get used now. The next time we're going to be on air, it's going to be 2022. I'm going to have to get used to saying this.
Also, a programming note for our College of Charleston fans.
Yeah.
The game is still on for tonight, but there will not be a College of Charleston broadcast on our sister station, The Zone, 94.7 and 910.
Yes. That is true. College of Charleston game will not be carried. They had a game. This all circles together. It all comes back together that they had a game postponed this past weekend because of COVID issues with their opponent. I think that was, what, URI in D.C.? They were supposed to play them in D.C. this past weekend?
Yeah, that game was canceled. It's not going to be made up.
Okay, canceled. That's what most of these college basketball games have been and are going to be. In fact, the Big East, they have forfeits. They're not even going to bother. They're just making the team forfeit. Here's the problem with that. One of the teams in particular had all but like one player vaccinated, and most of these athletes we know are vaccinated. In fact, the majority of the country is even vaccinated, so you would imagine the majority of these athletes are vaccinated. And so the point being, you could do everything right and still have to forfeit a game. The idea of threatening the forfeits, the NFL did this at the start of the year and then didn't act on it this past weekend, was more of a threat to try to bluff your way into getting more of your athletes to get the vaccine. But we're seeing it in college basketball, and I think it's ridiculous that teams have to forfeit games. I know it can be hard to make up some of these games and push the schedule around, but I think it's a dumb idea to forfeit the games because you could do everything right. Teams could be fully vaccinated. You could still test positive for COVID. You could still have an outbreak on your team. And instead of trying to work with said team, right, and maybe if you want to base it off of vaccination rate, that'd be a better idea to me. Right, and you give a team the benefit of the doubt if they have the majority of the team or the entire team vaccinated, and you work with them a little bit more because they worked with you by making sure their team was vaccinated. But it's silly. Like, we had Seton Hall ranked number 15 in the country, a one-loss team. They had to forfeit the other night. Couldn't play. And now I'm very curious to see how this works in the rankings. And once we get to March Madness, how is it going to work when you compare records and say, like, well, they had two losses, but they were both forfeits. Right? Those aren't actual losses. But on paper, they have losses. And then also, there's a minimum. The NCAA instituted a minimum in which you have to play at least, I think it's 25 games to qualify for the tournament. But if you're going to be making teams forfeit, I can only imagine the debates we're going to have if it comes to that, where there's a bubble team or a team that should clearly be a tournament team, but they only played 24 games because they had to forfeit some games. It's like, well, I mean, you kind of forced us to forfeit. We're vaccinated. We did our part. And we still tested positive. There are such a thing as breakthrough cases. This is a common misconception, and I can't believe that people are this. I don't want to use too harsh of a term, but unintelligent, I guess. Where people always point to when there are breakthrough cases and say, "Aha! Right, he was vaccinated. He still tested positive." Like that's some sort of indictment. It's not. The vaccine is not 100%. People are still going to test positive. The idea is that it's going to help you once you do, if and when you do test positive. So in college basketball, we're seeing these forfeits. I think it's crazy. I think it's ridiculous. I think they have to change the rules. In fact, Bob Bowlesby of the Big 12 came out this week and was saying something along those lines. That, we're going to take a look at it. You have to. Enough of these forfeits, forcing teams to take losses. You want to cancel the game? Okay, that's one thing. But then to put a loss on their record as well? I think it's ridiculous. So this all leads me back to what I was saying off the top, that South Carolina is supposed to be playing at 3 o'clock, but you never know. The Citadel, they were halfway to Samford last year, and they got the phone call and said, oh, yeah, we're not playing tomorrow. And they had to turn around, you know, the other 4 hours to head back. Just took a long road trip on a bus for no reason. So until these games actually tip off, you never know in college basketball. Yeah, you're not sure what's going to happen. Which takes me to the NBA. This is our final show of 2021. Of course, Christmas is this weekend, and that's the big day in the NBA. I would say the biggest. It's when people start to tune in. It may be the first time you actually watch NBA basketball all season. Every sport has their holiday or their specific day that they own. The NFL is actually trying to infiltrate Christmas Day. They have two games this year on Christmas Day. But the NBA, that's their day, Christmas Day. Problem is, we don't know what to expect because of these teams and COVID issues. I mean, the Nets can hardly field a team. They're supposed to be the big game Saturday night against the Lakers. That's the 8 o'clock tip-off on Christmas. This is their big day, and it may be wrecked because of these COVID protocols. The Celtics, in fact, this morning just signed Joe Johnson. This is where we've gotten. If you haven't been following the NBA, one, I don't blame you because not only is it early in the year, but also because number two, some of these players, like you're watching G League basketball. Some of these guys that are playing on these teams, like who are these guys? And they're signing. These teams have to fill out a roster. They're signing anybody they can. So Joe Johnson, who hasn't played in 4 years in the NBA at least, I think he's been playing in Ice Cube's Big Three. He hasn't played in the NBA in 4 years. He's 40 years old. The Celtics just signed him today because they need some help. And by the way, the Celtics are supposed to play the defending champs, the Bucks, on Christmas Day. And this is what they're resorting to. So as you sit down on Christmas, I could tell you from my family, we're a big basketball family. And I always look forward to the Christmas games. We go over to my aunt and uncle's house on Christmas Day. They have multiple TVs, you know, in different rooms of the house. Everyone has the game on. We're always watching the games. Even at the dinner table, we got the game on the TV. We're watching it. We kind of schedule dinner around the games. We're a big sports family, as you can imagine, working in this industry. And on Christmas Day, we love watching the games. But when you sit down to get you excited, you can watch Joe Johnson, 40-year-old Joe Johnson, making his first return to the NBA in half a decade on Saturday to play for the Celtics against the Bucks. That'll get you excited on Christmas. And no Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving. I don't even know who the Nets are going to have. And the Lakers are all beat up, and they're missing players too, and all these teams are. It's ridiculous. Now, I was talking to somebody the other day in the sports world who's part of this whole, you know, the testing and the protocol. And they were saying that, you know, they said, we're only test if somebody has symptoms. And so I've been on this for the last week or two. And don't worry, this is the last time you'll have to hear me talk about it in 2021. And then hopefully we'll have some changes by the time we're back in the air in the new year. But I do think, and the NFL has finally changed their mind on this and said, yeah, we're only going to test guys that show symptoms or if you're unvaccinated. I think that's the way everyone needs to go. Because what happens a lot of times is that you test these players, and maybe this has happened to you. I've heard from so many people in my own life that say, oh, I had no idea I had it until I got, you know, I had to get tested for this trip or for work or for this event. I had no idea I had. I never had any symptoms, but I had to get tested. They told me I was positive. Or maybe you were close contact, a friend of yours said, hey, I got COVID. You should go get tested. Okay. And then you go get tested and you always feel, you feel fine the whole time, but it comes back positive and I had it. How often does that happen with these athletes as well? Where they're asymptomatic, they're vaccinated, they're healthy young guys, but because they have to get tested every day or every week, of course we're going to have more positive tests than you would otherwise know. But what do you do in your personal life? You'll have your annual checkup, or at least, you know, you probably should, especially once you get to a certain age, you'll go to the doctor. But otherwise, don't you just normally go to the doctor when you're not feeling well? You don't just randomly go to the doctor and think, I have no symptoms. I feel totally fine, but I think I have a cold or I think I have the flu. Let me go get a test. Or, right, you've been like celibate or something, right? You think, let me go do a pregnancy test. Like, there's no reason to. You don't have any of the symptoms. You have no reason to believe you're pregnant. Why would you go to the store, to CVS, buy a home pregnancy test, go home and test yourself? There's no reason to believe you need to have a test. And I know these guys can pass it along. You can be asymptomatic, you can be vaccinated, and you can still pass COVID to somebody else. But then, as we've seen through these leagues, what happens? Well, then the guy that your teammate that gets it, he usually has no idea either. He's asymptomatic. He's vaccinated. He's a young, healthy athlete. And he has no idea he has it either, other than the close contact, and you have to quarantine, and, oh, we have to test you now, and we're testing these guys every day. My point being that the only reason why we're finding so many positives in these sports is because you're forcing them to get tested every day. And then you're forcing college basketball teams to forfeit games because they have positive tests when they, you know, the guys are asymptomatic, they're vaccinated, they're young, they're healthy, they have no idea they even have COVID, they have no symptoms, they feel fine, they could go play a game. They played OBJ tested positive on a Tuesday morning after scoring a touchdown Monday night. He had no idea he had COVID. Next morning, he comes into the facility, oh, tested positive, you're out for 10 days. It's like, well, I was just playing last night, and they've done studies that they have determined, and maybe this is the NFL being biased so they could continue to play their games, but they've done studies that have shown that in 2 years, there has not been a single case passed on a football field over the 2 years. I don't know how they determine that, but that's why they're, you know, doctors and scientists, and I just talk sports, and I relay the information to you. But if there's no risk of passing it along in those games, then let them go out there and play when they have no idea that they potentially are carrying the virus. And they pass it on to a teammate who also has no idea. And I don't want to sound crass in all this. I take the pandemic very seriously. I've been doing my part. I am vaccinated. But Adam Silver had some good comments this week, and let me see if I could pull them up quickly, where he said, look, this is something that we are living with now. We're going to be dealing with for the rest of time. And so we have to adjust, and I was happy to hear Silver say, because the NHL shut down this week. Now, look, the NHL usually shuts down around Christmas every year. They take about 3 days off. There's just not enough NHL fans to realize. But they've extended that break where they're taking about 5 days off now this year. So it's not as big of a deal as people will probably make it seem. It's a grabby headline, NHL shutting down for 5 days. They are already going to shut down for the Christmas holiday, and so they figured, why not? Let's take a couple extra days so we can regroup. And I have no problem with that. Guys are going to go home to their families. You're probably going to get more positive tests. Yeah, take an extra day or two afterwards just to get situated once again. That's fine. It's going to be a grabby headline, though. People are going to be passing it around. You've probably seen it. The NHL has to shut down. That's kind of a half-truth. And they also announced, by the way, that they're not going to send players to the Olympics in February, which I got to be – when it comes to the Olympics, there's only a couple of sports in the Olympics that I actually like watching. In the summer, it's basketball. And then in the winter, I do like watching the hockey, even though I'm not the biggest hockey fan, but I like Olympic hockey. And I also love curling. And curling is the sport I watch the most. So I'm a little disappointed that the NHL athletes will not be participating in the Olympics when it comes to hockey, because that's one of the events, one of the few Olympic events I actually do like watching. And I also feel for those players, because now you're going on about an eight-year stretch here. Right? The last time was, right, is it the winter? That's every four. It was 4 years ago. Now you can't play this year, and then it's going to be another 4 years. And so for some of these guys who were like already, you know, 28 years old, fast forward 8 years, you're 36, like there goes your opportunity. So I do feel bad for some of the players, but I think it's the smartest thing for the NHL to do, because it's going to be in the middle of their season. They can't send these guys to the Olympics. It's going to disrupt the whole NHL season as you try to come back and finish your season. But I was happy to see Adam Silver's comments when he said, no, we're not going to be moving these games on Christmas Day. He realized how important the games are. But I also think he's coming around to this idea, just like the NFL, where the NFL is saying, we're only going to test guys that start to develop symptoms. Just like you. You only go to the doctor when you're not feeling well. I mean, sure, you'll have your annual physical, right? But otherwise, you only go get a test if you think it's necessary. You only go to the doctor if you're not feeling well. And I know there's been an abundance of caution by these leagues, and rightfully so. But now that over 90% of all these athletes are vaccinated, wasn't that supposed to change something? I don't know if we need to do the daily testing. Plus, I'm sure these leagues would love to be able to save some of that money on the daily testing. I'm sure that plays a part of it as well. But I'm seeing these college basketball games be just outright canceled and teams having a forfeit. I think it's wrong. You know, they're vaccinated. They've done everything that they can. You still can test positive. And the rules can be so strict that close contacts, of course, they're all going to be close contacts. They're in meeting rooms. They're on the practice court. They eat together. This time of year, in the winter break, they room together. In fact, they probably room together throughout the year. You always put the athletes together. They travel together. Everyone's a close contact. And an entire team can be vaccinated. You have one breakthrough case, and it's like, oh, I'm sorry, you lose the game. And I just don't like the idea. Let me see if I can – this Adam Silver quote, I should have had it pulled up already. But I read it last night, and I thought, yeah, that's a good message. This is one of the things Adam Silver said, commissioner of the NBA. We're finding ourselves where we're sort of – where we sort of knew we were going to get to – hold on. Let me reread this, because this is – we're finding ourselves where we sort of knew we were going to get to for the past several months. That still doesn't make much sense to me. But Silver continued and said, and that is that this virus will not be eradicated, and we're going to have to learn to live with it. That's what we're experiencing in the league right now. Our ability to find a way to keep operating is also significant for society, to show that there are ways, despite living in this COVID era, that we can find a safe and responsible way to keep going. Yeah, I like that, and I agree with Adam Silver. And I'm happy to see that he said, no, Christmas games, they're still on. Now, I don't know who's going to be playing in them, but at least they're going to make sure the games are being played. And I think all these leagues should adjust some things. I don't think we need to test these guys every day. If you have somebody who seems to be sick, right, yeah, then, you know, have them get tested and see if, what else is going on with that team. But otherwise, a lot of these tests only come up because you're forcing the guys to get tested every day. They have no idea that they're positive. They're asymptomatic. They're vaccinated. They never have any symptoms. Neither do their teammates. But you're forcing them to stay out. And then the protocols require, you know, 10 days. You're away from the team. And it just snowballs. And it's tough to operate that way. Coming up, we'll look ahead to the this weekend in the NFL. And also, more thoughts on what's going on in the basketball world, because the Lady Gamecocks had a big win last night, and they continue to roll, even when other teams are having a hard time with all this COVID stuff. Get to all that coming up. Plus, we'll talk some golf next hour with Jeremy Schilling. It's the Mar Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers. Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Mar Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With it till 2:30 today leading into Gamecocks basketball against Army. Big day for Army. They take on South Carolina, and their football team's playing in the bowl game against Missouri tonight. More on that later on, as I'll give you some picks before we go. Picks for the rest of the 2021 year, including college football playoff picks. Because this is our final show of this calendar year. We'll talk to you in 2022. But how about the Lady Gamecocks? Get the win last night and come from behind fashion. They're 12-0. Half of their wins have been against top 15 teams. Crazy. All right, it's not like they're playing a bunch of cupcakes. They've had an incredible non-conference schedule, and they've beaten Maryland and Duke and Stanford, and they beat up on UConn, and they beat Oregon and NC State. What a roll. 12-0 start, half their wins against ranked teams, come from behind fashion yesterday, half of the wins on the road. Dawn Staley's team's good. And UConn, usually believed to be that toughest competitor. They're all sorts of banged up right now, outside of the top 10 for the first time in a long time. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's go to the phones. Ricardo is with us. Ricardo, what's going on? How are you?
Good. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you and Joe.
Yeah, likewise.
Going into hopefully 2022 is a better year than 21 for some of us.
Yes.
Real quick, my nephew had COVID, and it really affected him. He's an athlete. He plays for 76ers. You know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
And he says every day it's like he has a cold. And his numbers have really decreased, three-point, field goal. So it's really, really affected him. And we really don't know because this vaccine hasn't really had a trial period. It was kind of fast-tracked. So we don't know, but this would be a great case study. What happens to these asymptomatic athletes? Does that COVID go into something else? We really don't know. So, you know, if 90% of them, they're called breakthroughs.
Yeah.
And some of them had the extra, you know, the booster shot. This is very strange that this, you know, it's spreading the way it is. I mean, they go to different cities, they travel. So every place they go, the arenas, you know, when they were in the bubble, it's funny, there was no cases, you know, in an environment where it was protected. But real, one more thing, Ja Morant's been out for, I think, 12 games, and they, Memphis went 10-2. And some of the fans are saying they don't want him back. And I thought that was weird. How could you be an MVP candidate and your team's 10-2 when you're not there? That's very strange. But that's what I want to say. And Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to you and Joe.
Yeah, likewise, appreciate it, Ricardo. Yeah, Ja Morant, that's the old Bill Simmons of the Patrick Ewing theory. Now, I think the numbers don't actually back up the theory in regards to Patrick Ewing, but Bill Simmons always felt like the Knicks were better without Patrick Ewing. But it's that idea that you're better without your star, because with your star, you feel like you have to force feed him. And so that was Bill Simmons. Actually, it was really his buddy. He came up with a theory when they were in college back in the day during the Knicks' heyday with Ewing. But it seemed like whenever Ewing would take a night off or he missed a game or he was injured, they would be even better. In fact, he was injured when they made that miraculous run to the NBA Finals as the 8th seed in 99. I don't think Ewing played another game for the Knicks, so people forget he was actually on that team, but he was injured. And they still made it to the NBA Finals with Latrell Sprewell and Allen Houston. So there's always this theory, and it's the Patrick Ewing theory, but you can apply it to other stars, that teams are better without their stars because when the stars are on the court or the field, you feel like you have to get them the ball every time down. And if you go back and look, a lot of NFL teams actually get better the year after losing their star receiver. Randy Moss, every team in his career had an improved record the year after he left. Whether it was the Vikings, the Raiders, the Patriots, go back and look. Every team in Randy Moss's career. Almost every team. Ocho Cinco, same idea. A lot of star receivers, if you go back and you look, the team has a better record the next year because you don't feel like you have to force feed them the ball anymore and you can actually just play your normal offense. I don't know. Maybe for the Grizzlies, there's some of that. Ja Morant obviously has the ball in his hands the majority of the time. Now without him, you can actually play more like a team and you can work it around. It's not about getting it in Ja's hand and you don't have an over dribbler or anything, but he's really good. I mean, that's hard to turn down. If Ja Morant wanted to come play for your team, would you really say no? He's already on the Grizzlies. Would you really say no to him coming back? But yeah, he said he was hurt after hearing Grizzly fans, you know, telling him to stay out. Don't come back from your injury. We're playing better without you. I get that from the fans' perspective. They're playing better. Why disrupt a good thing? But man, it's hard to turn down a talent like Ja Morant. But maybe it's the Patrick Ewing theory that teams are actually better without their star players because they can play more like a team. And you don't have to have Ja bring the basketball up and have it in his hands for, you know, 70% of the game. Other guys can get involved. You can play more like a team, pass it around, find the truly better shot or good shot of the possession. I don't know. But Ja Morant is really talented. I liked him the most coming out of that draft, even more so than Zion, said that on the show. And he's somebody that if he was healthy and willing to play, I don't think I would say no. I don't think I'd say, yeah, stay away. But it is interesting the Grizzlies are playing well without him. or so well without him. We'll wrap up hour one when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight.
Now this is a classic Santa Christmas song.
The best version of it, too.
Now, who is this? I hear this actual version all the time, but I don't know who actually sings it.
This is Eartha Kitt.
Eartha
Kitt. Orangeburg County native.
Oh.
She was Catwoman on the Batman TV show.
How about that? Eartha Kitt. Yeah, so from South Carolina, and when she passed away, she was living in Connecticut. So,
right.
Well, right up my alley. Perfect. Yes, a classic Christmas song as we get ready for the holiday. This is the final Morrow Midday Show of 2021. We'll talk to you in the new year. In the meantime, let's talk to Super Dave. You can always join us on the phones, 843-721-9500. Super Dave, what's going on? How are you?
Just going to miss you guys till the 3rd of January, I guess, right?
Yes, exactly. I appreciate that.
So hopefully y'all will have a safe Christmas. I guess y'all go to travel or got a lot of basketball games to cover.
Yeah, I'll be traveling. I'll miss it. I'll miss being on the radio, hanging out for these 3 hours the next week and a half. But we'll hit the ground running in 2022.
So you be up in the snow belt, or you gonna be
not.
Hanging around?
I hope not. Yeah, no, I'll be traveling. I'll be up north for the holidays. Got a wedding as well. I got to travel. I got some old basketball.
Maybe you'll get a Christmas snow, eh?
Yeah, we'll see. I hope not. I'm done with snow. Get the snow out of here.
No way. We in the South will never get it, so except every 100 years. So we don't mind, you know, getting a little cool winter coming, you know?
Yeah. What do you hope to find under your Christmas tree this year? What would be your number one gift possible?
Well, hopefully Dolly can be coming home this Christmas, you know. Trying to get her home now, you know, working everything out, logistics, you know.
Yes. Well, so, I hope you guys still have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. I hope all your predictions come true, Super Dave, and I look forward to catching up with you in 2022.
And I know he's going to be pulling for Army tonight against Mizzou in the Armed Forces Bowl.
Yeah, so too will I. I'll be giving my picks later on for the rest of the 2021 calendar year. But I'm already all over Army tonight in that game against Missouri. And Army against South Carolina basketball, too. Coming up, we'll take you right up to that coverage starting at 2:30. When we come back, we'll talk some golf with Jeremy Schilling on the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.